Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. We're here again tonight in the fabulous Den of Iniquity. And I'm about to introduce another wonderful panel. First of all, sitting at my side is...
Nobody can guess.
Stressed out and worn out Zilpha. Hey, Zilpha.
Hey, everybody. Hey, John.
Zilpha's just finishing up the semester. She's a grad student.
True.
Welcome. Welcome to my world.
You're silly.
Sitting across from me, coming back, is Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hello.
How are you this evening?
Good. In honor of this podcast, I just wanted to let everyone know, just as in honor of the nudist podcast, we are all dressing accordingly.
You know what? Actually, John and I were going to cut off some old t-shirts so we could, you know, show off our midriffs, but we didn't get around to it.
You're welcome.
Yes, and I'm wearing a potato sack.
And returning, it's been a while. Welcome back, Jessica.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks. When we thought about doing this, you came first to my mind because you are a dancer.
Oh, yeah. And we're immodest.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I did wear something trashy. So.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Thank you. And joining us through the internet is our fabulous A-team blogger, Tierza. Hi, Tierza.
Hi.
And I recommend everyone go to themormonexpression.com/blogs and check out the fabulous things Tierza writes. She is an all-star. Didn't I just say that?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. You're making me blush.
Well, you deserve it. So
we also have a studio audience tonight.
Yeah, we have the usual riffraff hanging around the edges.
They may pitch in. We don't know.
Let's see. Before we start, I do want to announce we did put on the calendar a new event, July 20th, up near Woodruff, Utah. I'm sure you all know where that is. At the fabulous Monte Cristo Camping Ground will be our first ever Mormon Expression Ward Campout. July 20th through the 22nd. We are unfortunately limited to 200 people. This is a family event, so send an email to mail@mormonexpression.com and get your reservations in. We hope to see you all there. It should be good times. Did you realize you just got an assignment to keep track of?
Yes, I just realized that.
That's why I was looking at you. All right. For tonight's topic, recently the blogosphere has been all lit up by a strange little event that happened up at what we used to call Rick's College. Yes. And now it's BYU Idaho. Of course, the BYU educational system has a dress and grooming standard, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But central to the dress and grooming standard is the Mormon concept of modesty, which is what we're talking about tonight. And for those of you who haven't followed this little Idaho event, I think it's been picked up by the national press in different places. One of the ways they enforce the dress and grooming standard is at the testing center. So if you go in to take a test, you can be kicked out. And there was a little sign posted. We will post an image of it up on the website, where they, banned what's called
skinny
jeans. Now, I thought they were just talking about like thin jeans, but apparently this is a wardrobe piece.
Oh yeah, it's a staple.
So help me out here, because I'm completely clueless. So they're not made of denim?
No, they're denim. They're just very stretchy denim.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
I guess there's Lycra. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So these are tight pants.
They're tight.
Now, we also have, and it's been verified as true, the picture of the young lady who wore the jeans and exactly what she was wearing at the time.
And they weren't even real skinny jeans.
No, they weren't.
They weren't.
Have you not seen it?
I haven't seen it.
They weren't real skinny. I mean,
no, because skinny jeans go all the way to the ankle.
Right.
And hers, I mean, they might have been kind of tight on top just because they fit her well. Mm-hmm. But they were loose from like the knee down.
So perhaps they were just mad at her because she has a shapely figure.
Because she doesn't look like a boy.
That's exactly what she was wearing.
Oh, my.
And once again, we'll have this picture posted up on the website.
Those are not skinny jeans.
Well,
they're like a straight leg jean, or like a boot cut.
Yeah, boot cut. That's what I said. Perhaps a boot cut.
Anyway, she was not allowed to go into the testing center.
Aww.
Now, in all fairness to her, To the testing center or to BYU Idaho.
It was not fair to her.
There was a standard about wearing tight fitting clothing, and it was left up to the testing center. And I don't think we've identified the culprit of who actually posted this notice up and who actually let her out. But I was complaining to Zilpha earlier. This is standard like chicken shit church operation, because this is one of those things where the brethren like to define something in such a way. the brethren like to define something in such a way with plausible deniability. You know, they'll say tight fitting clothing, then leave it to functionaries to, then they can say, oh, well, that doesn't violate our standard. You know, so I still hold the church culpable if for nothing else than not defining it. You know, if you want to make these rules and then not define them, this sort of thing's going to happen. They're going to say, oh, this wasn't us. This didn't come from the administration. It didn't come from the administration by design. They don't want to be, on that level. They'll leave nameless cogs in the wheel to enforce this thing.
Yeah, but really, if your clothes fit you right, they're going to be form fitting.
Fitted.
Says you.
Yeah. Yes.
Unless you're looking frumpy.
Yeah, frumpy.
And dumpy.
Or wearing a potato sack.
Yeah. I mean, it's going
to... It's a fire hazard to wear loose clothing. Come on now.
So
I'd rather be alive and in form-fitting clothes.
So we really want to focus in on the concept of modesty, and especially as it relates to the church and its doctrine, because it's an interesting thing how tightly it's been woven into concepts of self-identity, concepts of sin, and concepts of just... being. I mean, we're going to talk about the honor code here and the idea that honor and what that means in the English language is tied into how long your sleeves are is just a really Mormon thing. And you're right in my line of sight. So it's not like I'm hitting on you. I'm just going to bore right into you. So it's really just tied so much into that Mormon concept in ways that I think are foreign to people outside the church. Before we get started, I want to take a step way, way, way back, like 50 million years back. And let's talk a little bit about evolutionary biology and evolutionary psychology. Really, every organism on this planet shares concern for three things. One, it has to be in the right environment for it to survive. It has to be in the right temperature, climate, or whatever. Two, it needs food. And three, it needs to reproduce. And that's ultimately everything sort of boils down to those three categories. And the fact is that we are simply organisms like other organisms. Now, we have higher function, obviously, and we can do more than fight. How perfect.
The cat.
What is it? Feed, fight, and the other F. But those are really a driver. And if you study psychology, you'll see that some of those things, that quest for survival on the fundamental level just sort of underpins everything. And obviously it underpins all the relationships between the sexes. And in anthropology and biology, we talk about something called sexual dimorphism, which is the differentiation between the male and the female, the species. So you see that it's often tied up in finding or attracting a mate, like peacock feathers. They don't really have a strong, biological purpose outside of mate attraction. So different species have different things of those. But and there's all sorts of reasoning behind all this stuff as to, you know, like, for example, people might be attracted to a woman who's got a larger pelvis. Larger pelvis means she's more likely to be able to successfully birth. Where in the olden days, you know, 15,000 years ago, you know, somebody who's faster, somebody who's stronger.
Or chubbier.
Or chubbier, yeah, you know, oftentimes, especially in, we were listening to a news show, and they were talking about these women talking about each other in Africa, and they were talking about the other girls being fat, and the commentator had to come on saying, you have to remember that's a compliment, because this is a place where there's not a lot of food. So whenever they say fat, they're meaning that as a compliment, because if you don't have enough food resources, you might not ovulate, you might not be as successful in reproduction. And a lot of this stuff is subconscious in us. We don't even realize that we're doing these things. But for human beings, we have developed higher orders of things, and we have cultural components too. Anybody who's been, you know, into a very vastly different culture will see the sexual signaling and sexual attractiveness changes somewhat from culture to culture, but it all tends to be based on sexual dimorphism. So if we take the example of Chinese foot binding, Obviously, men tend to be larger than women, so that's a dimorphic thing. So oftentimes, people will wear clothing or otherwise modify their body to emphasize that. So you'll see men wearing, you know, like if you go to conference, you'll see men wearing shoulder pads in their suit jackets because that gives them a more broad masculine look. And you'll see
women's suits have shoulder pads too.
Women's suits wear shoulder pads, and that's because you'll notice that in the 80s, when shoulder pads were really in, so were really big belts. So it what it was trying to do was emphasize the differentiation, the hourglass mm-hmm. shape. So these things are not like all constant. You know, neck stretching and things like that can be tied to those things. Well, there's some that we do very much in our culture here, which are really quite striking and probably to our ancestors of even 100 years ago would be very bizarre. One of those, well, I don't know how long they've been doing, but wearing like rouge on your cheeks or lipstick. The psychologist will tell us that the dark red lipstick mimics the vulva when a woman is sexually aroused, which turns red. A woman, when she's sexually aroused, the man also will become flushed. So they'll get a reddish look about their skin. You know, obviously a brassiere holds breasts up and makes a woman's
bosom
tits. Bosom. I was trying to look for makes a woman's bosoms. Look younger, and younger is associated with fertility, right? So you take all these different these aspects that really kind of fundamentally pushed down to our mating strategies and what we find sexually attractive in terms of getting a mate. Why this is funny is you will find women in the church, these old women wearing like great big brassieres, poking their boobs out really high, wearing dresses, dressing in a very, very different way from men, with their lips painted red, complaining about the younger generation wearing flip-flops or something inappropriate like that. And it's just from if you were an alien coming down to Earth and seeing, you know, I remember talks about them telling young women they basically needed to shave their legs, you know. Well, that's a principle they call neoteny, which is trying to look younger and younger and younger. Because of those breeding strategies. So I want to lay that out there right now to say that modesty is a function of culture, but it plays into this idea of we want to make ourselves attractive to the opposite sex. And we're going to see a theme going through this whole night of this tightrope that women have to walk that is razor sharp and unwinnable and puts women in an awful situation, which is in the Mormon culture and in other Western cultures, they have to be sexually attractive and at the same time not be overly sexually attractive. And that line is not well defined, and women are forced into this, just this self-destructive cycle downward as they try to do, as the church says, be feminine, but be modest, and you're responsible for the attraction that men have to you. Somebody else say something. I'm getting tired of talking.
Can I throw a little wrench in that?
Sure. Go ahead.
There. You know, it's interesting because originally the idea of modesty really has nothing to do, well, I mean, I think everything has to do something with sexuality, but it wasn't really about sexuality. It was about not putting yourself forward, not being, getting attention. And if you look like at older, if you go back a couple of generations, when they talk about modesty, they talk about men and women equally in modesty because they're not talking about sexuality. They're talking about not being like above your station or above your whatever, not getting attention to yourself. So it's interesting how it's become more and more and more about sex, at least in the church itself. It's become more about sex.
That's an excellent point. And I just sort of skipped right over that, which is modesty. Yeah, the modest mouse. It has to do with being, not above your station, like you say, and we have completely redefined that in the church to everybody thinks immediately about sex. The same thing with morality. You know, I think if you went to a Greek, you know, who were talking about morality all the time, I don't think they would even, the sex would even cross their mind. They'd be talking about, you know, lying and cheating and ethical treatment of your slaves and all this other stuff, which in a lot of ways are bigger. I started making a list last week of things that now that I'm out of the church, what I find immoral versus what I found immoral before. And they were big things. They were things like, child slavery and female circumcision and these awful things. And none of them had anything to do with like who you sleep with voluntarily. Roofies don't count.
Thank you for clarifying.
So I think that's an excellent point. So let's talk a little bit about how the church actually defines modesty and what we're talking about here. I want to go first of all to the BYU Honor Code statement. So to go to BYU at the flagship school of the church, you have to sign what they call the Honor Code statement. And it starts off with the 13th article of faith. That's the first thing they say, you know, being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, all that stuff. And, you know, they have in here like cleanliness and live a chaste and virtuous life, use clean language, abstain from things like alcohol, participate regularly in church services and observe the dress and grooming standards. So the thing that I think is funny about this is, not a lot of that people would normally attribute to honor and being honorable. You know, he was an honorable guy because he didn't use foul language. I mean, that's kind of a warped definition of it to me. You know, we think about an honorable person in the workplace or in the military or whatever, somebody who did their duty above and beyond, who strove for some sort of virtue in the traditional sense of the word and not just not doing these petty little things.
Right. Isn't it? It seems like in the LDS church, we have these like markers, like you can pretty much tell like what kind of a Mormon you are with certain things. And you can, at least I could, when I was Mormon, I could tell what kind of a Mormon you were by what you were wearing.
Yeah. And there's this acceptable thing. Like mm-hmm. there's Mormons who, let's take like caffeine and Coke. Mm-hmm. There's Mormons who specifically flaunt the fact that they drink Diet Coke or whatever, because they're trying to make a statement. And there's Mormons who specifically flaunt the fact that they do not. And so you get those, and that has a lot to do with dress and grooming too. And there's a big effort to control that. So let's actually read. I'm going to actually read you the BYU dress and grooming standard. The dress and grooming of both men and women should always be modest, neat, and clean, consistent with the dignity adherent to representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and any of its institutions of higher education. Modesty and cleanliness are important values that reflect personal dignity and integrity through which students, staff, and faculty represent the principles and standards of the Church. Members of the BYU community commit themselves to observe the following standards, which reflect the direction of the Board of Trustees and the Church Publication for the Strength of Youth. The dress and grooming standards are as follows. Men, a clean and well cared for appearance should be maintained. Clothing is inappropriate when it is sleeveless, that sounds like women.
No, they have to put that in for men too, so they can be fair.
It doesn't apply really, but they are. Yeah.
Okay, when it is, well, my goodness, sleeveless men.
And revealing clothing.
We don't want to see any midriffs.
when a sleeve is revealing or form-fitting, shorts must be knee length or longer. Hairstyle should be clean and neat, avoiding extreme styles or colors, and trimmed above the collar, leaving the ears uncovered. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to read. You know, honest to God, I mean, people have to sign this thing to get into the school, and you can get kicked out for this stuff. Your ears uncovered. Sideburns.
Well, and the crazy thing, John, is I was laughing about this reading it. I bet it's easier to get a weed card in California than it is to get a beard card at BYU.
Probably. There's enough doctors around BYU who want to stick their thumb in BYU's eye. I'll give you one. So if you really want one, it's not hard. But you talk to people who had beard cards and you'll get side looks the whole time you're there. Sideburns should not extend below the earlobe or onto the cheek. If worn, mustaches should be neatly trimmed and may not extend beyond or below the corners of the mouth. Men are expected to be clean shaven. Beards are not acceptable. Earrings and other body piercings are not acceptable. Shoes should be worn in all public campus areas. That's the end of the male grooming standard. Jessica, do you have the female
I
one
do.
There? Because I cut off of my page. Can you read that?
Yep. Women, a clean and well cared for appearance should be maintained. Clothing is inappropriate when it is sleeveless, strapless, backless, or revealing, has slits above the knee, or is form-fitting. Dresses, skirts, and shorts must be knee-length or longer. Hairstyles should be neat, clean and neat, avoiding extremes in styles or colors. Excessive ear piercing, more than one per ear, and all other body piercing are not acceptable. Shoes should be worn in all public campus areas.
All other body piercings. Anybody else have dirty thoughts when that?
Yeah.
All right.
I think they need to spell it out.
Well, so, the men's paragraph is way bigger than the women's.
Worse for the men,
but the women, but a lot of that was dedicated to facial hair.
Why did they not mention slits above the knee on the men's shorts?
Skirts?
Or backs.
You say slits above the knee?
Now, I was at BYU in the 90s, and I know some of the rest of you are.
Oh, it's for a skirt. It's not like slits in jeans.
It just says
it's clothing. It's probably a skirt.
That's what's above the knee.
What's funny is the hypocrisy of when I was at BYU, you had, I don't know if it's still this way. When you went to a gym class, you couldn't bring your own clothes in.
No.
You had to wear they were short shorts. They were like Daisy Duke length, right? And they had the little triangle on the side, the little gusset, and the shirts were all like worn just threadbare thin, And, you know, here you'd have this, you may not wear these things. And then you go to the gym class and they made you wear them. You had no other choice but to wear those. And then somebody posted, you know, in this whole discussion, this whole brouhaha, the picture of the BYU cheerleaders all like making sexy poses. Did you guys see that picture going out there?
No, but I've seen.
And they're all, you know, wearing very short, appropriate clothing for what they're doing. I have nothing wrong with the cheerleader wear. But, you know, to say, hey, it is immoral or immodest to wear short clothing unless you're in front of 70,000 people and kicking your legs up in the world and showing them your cooch. Then it's okay to wear it. It's just, it's an absolute hypocrisy.
Inspiring the football players to greatness. Come on.
I guess. And, you know, and.
Well, another thing that never made sense to me is if you wear a modest swimsuit, but you wore it like to campus, you would be totally immodest. But you can wear it to swimming and it's modest. It's considered modest. Why? How is that possible?
I mean, these are all excellent points. Let's go a little bit back in time. BYU wasn't always the uptight, nerdy school it is today. For a long time, up until the war, it was a fairly small school. And if you go back to like the 20s and turn of the century, it was a fairly liberal school. And as a matter of fact, you can read histories of where it would get the brethren all bent out of shape. Then came the war. And of course, the GI Bill all across the United States pumped schools up with tons and tons of students who might not have had the opportunity to go to college before. And then came the counterculture movement, which started really in the 50s, the beatniks and, you know, a lot of the soldiers getting back from the war were sort of sick of everything and started this sort of movement. Well, Ernie Wilkinson, who from the 50s to the 70s was the president of BYU, really didn't like the counterculture. So BYU became ground zero for the American counterculture movement. So why does BYU have a rule against facial hair? It's really quite simple. It came in the 60s. It's because hippies wore beards and your straight-laced business guys did not. So it became very important at that point for the church to start making a differentiation. And the church really took on this identity of we are uber Americans. And that started the germ of that was after polygamy when the church was searching for a new identity. But after World War II, it just really kicked into high gear. And if you read the missionary manuals from that time, they don't say wear a white shirt and a tag. They say dress like a businessman. You know, and that's the way it was up until the late 60s, where Mormon missionaries did not differentiate themselves from the way people were dressing in a standard sort of way. So BYU, and then by extension the church, started adopting these things of saying, we're going to differentiate ourselves. And the problem is once a rule like that gets set in stone, you can't ever get rid of it until, as I've read this down, we have people identifying modesty and honor and chastity with facial hair, which is completely ridiculous. It's a non sequitur. And we have done the same thing with any sort of displaying of especially female bodies. And when I mean displaying, I'm not talking about like a, I'm not talking about like a hoochie coochie dancer. I'm just talking about people dressing appropriately for their bodies.
Or even dressing. I mean, I attended BYU in the 90s. I remember the first time I had to get an ID card, and the girl in front of me had shorts that were literally like half an inch above her knee. And they came, and I know this sounds untrue, but they, you know, they had their ruler and they measured them, and her, it just so happened that hers had a cuff on them. And so she stood there and she asked, does anybody have any nail clippers? Oh, and somebody did, and she clipped the hem on her pants and rolled them down so that they covered her knee. And then they were like, okay, that's fine. You can go in.
Yeah,
it was the most bizarre moment.
Those searches, yeah.
I mean, how is that better? How is that more appropriately dressed?
It's then. Not. It's silly. I mean, it's like the times we'd stand in line to go in to eat and we'd pull our shorts down, but we had a long shirt on. If anybody came and lifted up our shirt, it would have been all over. Yeah. our undies would have been, you know, all on display for everyone to see. But it was just the game we played.
But I have to say, it was such a shock because I didn't start school at BYU. I started at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And in Fairbanks, I mean, all we cared about was that you were warm. It really didn't matter what was on your body. As long as you were warm, you were fine. And so you went, I mean, how many days did I roll out of bed in my sweatsuit and go to class like that, just throw a coat on and go to class? When I got to BYU, it was so hard to have to, like, do my hair every day and wear makeup every day and dress nice every day. It felt like
why'd you have prison. To do your hair and put on makeup?
Well, didn't you see how many times in that code that cleanliness and all that stuff came up there?
And you can't be too casual.
And
yeah.
Or no, comfortable. Because, you know, comfort is, you know, opposite to godliness.
Because when Zilpha, when we were doing surveys of manuals this afternoon, and what I was surprised is I thought I'd find a lot of lessons on modesty. What I found was more lessons aimed at girls on being comely and attractive than I found on modesty. And attractive is a key word there because the manuals for the boys talk about selecting an eternal companion. Selecting, it's an active verb. The manuals for the women talk about being worthy of being an eternal companion. There's no lessons in the women's manuals on selecting a worthy priesthood holder. It's understanding the priesthood. It's being worthy of basically a priesthood holder.
And attracting.
Attracting.
A
yes.
Worthy priesthood
holder. And for the guys, like the priesthood is their main asset. And for the girls, I think attractiveness is often their main asset in the church.
Yes. So it's not complete torture dealing with the priesthood.
No.
Something positive to go home to.
David O. McKay, here's a little quote while we're waiting for John. He said, a beautiful woman, if she was also chaste and modest, was creation's masterpiece.
If she was also chaste and modest. This one,
she was smart.
This one almost made me cry this afternoon. This is from the Aaronic Priesthood Manual number 2, which is the one they're using today. This is lesson number 37, understanding women's roles. You think, oh great. Mm-hmm. They're going to teach the kids about women. Objective, each young man will understand women's roles in the church, the community, and the home. Okay, great. Number 2, it defines what the roles of the church, the community, and the home are. And there's 3 of them. Are you ready for them? A, the importance and blessing of being a daughter of God. The importance and blessing of being a wife, and the importance and blessing of being a mother. All 3 roles for women are defined in relationship to a man.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there about pursuing their own, developing their self. There's nothing in there about all the other crap that's in this manual that it's telling the duties of the blessings of work or the blessings of self-discipline and all this other stuff that appears in the manual for the boys is completely stripped clean here in this thing on what women's roles are. And so if you read through these manuals, you'll see over and over again that women are something that they're set up to be attractive and to serve everybody else. It's all about relationship to everyone else, which is why this stuff on modesty is so insidious.
Yes.
Yeah. So why is it that modesty is such a big deal in the church?
Okay, so let's go to Gospel Principles, the current one. This is chapter 39, the Law of Chastity. Saint's plan. Saint's plan. All right, page 228. If you're following along in your book, Satan's plan is to deceive as many of us as he can to prevent us from returning to live with our heavenly Father. One of the most damaging things he can do is entice us to break the law of chastity. He is cunning and powerful. He would like us to believe it is no sin to break this law. Many people have been deceived. We must guard ourselves against evil influence. Satan attacks the standards of modesty. Okay, here's the meat here. Satan attacks the standards of modesty. He wants us to believe that because the human body is beautiful, it is something to flaunt and expose. Our Heavenly Father wants us to keep our bodies covered so that we do not encourage improper thoughts in the minds of others.
And you know what's funny about that is the more you keep your body covered, the more any little part that's uncovered is seen as sexual.
Yeah, this is where I go way back to where we started the podcast, because you cannot stop the forces of nature. And there are some weirdos who have been in the Quorum of the Twelve, like Spencer Kimball.
Yeah.
What's
Peterson?
Peterson, yeah. And then Boyd K. Packer, the Holy Trinity of Weirdness, who believe that somehow you can stop sexual urges. And sexual urges are precognition. They come from hormones. They don't come from thought.
Dallin H. Oakes contributed to that.
He's getting weirder and weirder in his...
You want to know what he said?
Yeah.
He said, young women, please understand that if you dress immodestly, you are magnifying this problem by becoming pornography to some of the men who see you.
Wow.
The problem with this is you are defining the crime, and this is key because this is absolutely true in the church. You're defining the crime of what a woman wears in terms of what happens in a guy's head. And not all men, a man. So one man can look at you and say, I find that what she is wearing to be arousing, and you have violated what these standards here have been set up for. And the problem is sexual dimorphism is in and of itself, titillating, for lack of a better word. It causes sexual response. That's what we're biologically programmed to do. And it doesn't matter if you go down and move to Colorado City and start combing your hair up in that bouffant. What do they call that hairdo they do where they comb their hair back? And you wear those potato sack dresses that they wear, that will become associated in everybody's mind with femininity. And I guarantee you there's 17-year-old guys getting a semi every time they see one of those hairdos walk by, because that's what they've learned to associate with sexuality. You can't escape that. And what's fascinating is if you watch conference, the men get up all up in these dark Brooks Brothers shirts and ties and suit coats. And the women wear these outlandish suits. They're pastel. Mm-hmm. You won't see short outside of 1984. Since then, you will not see a single woman in the business wearing these. They wear heavy makeup. They usually they're coiffed, they're bouffanted.
But John, they are older women. So to them, that is stylish still.
But what I'm saying is a woman cannot in the church go and wear like a dark,
business suit. You would wear in a business context,
because she's disobeying the rule of being feminine. And you see that rule, that statement come up over here again and again. She's dressing too much like a man. If you wear a pantsuit to church, somebody will come talk to you because you are not being feminine enough. But if you're too feminine, like our friend at BYU, and show too many curves, even though the body is naturally curvy, and yes, it's naturally sexually appealing, the female body to the male is just like the male body is naturally sexually appealing to the woman. And when you're showing that, you're not like trying to, you know, get dollars stuffed into your G-string. You're just dressing to be attractive.
Yes. Good point.
Although you can stuff dollars into my G-string whenever you want.
Well, Zilpha asked before. Zilpha, you said, why all this? Why are we talking about all this? And I think it goes back to the sex podcast where it's all these stops and starts. It's like, you know, it's okay, this is bad, this is bad. Now it's not. You know, this is bad, this is bad. Now it's not. The same with modesty. It's like, I mean, there's similarities there. And if you're the one that's controlling those starts and stops and what's okay and what's not okay, then it's the control aspect of it, right? And so that's really what it comes down to is why does the church care so much about modesty? Why are they doing, I mean, why are they doing all this? To me, it's another aspect of control.
Go ahead.
Well, I was reading and Jess read the same paper article thing, about how in the 80s, the church took and distributed pamphlets and did training to their sister missionaries to teach them how to dress more professionally because, according to the woman who was in charge of it, they were dressing, let's see. Well, one of the words she used was, childlike clothing. But, you know, in the church, you're not taught how to dress professionally as a woman. You're taught to dress just modestly and femininely. So, you know, ruffles are fine, for a woman. You know,
well, especially if all you're ever going to do is be a mom,
right,
or a wife.
That's fine. But as soon as you're representing the church, then they see it differently.
Well,
then you look dowdy and you're not seen as a professional organization if you have these ladies walking around in their, you know, jumpers.
But what I thought was funny about the article was that women they talked about the jumpers and stuff that women were encouraged to wear. That's what was embarrassing to the brethren was that they had trained women to dress a certain way in the chapels, and then they went out to the world and suddenly it was starkly different.
Right. They looked very silly.
Except for that, you know, when you're on a mission, those jumpers and things are the most practical thing to wear because you're out, you know, especially if you're on a bike. You're not going to dress professional on a bike.
What
I'm
about
sorry.
A pantsuit?
Know, they should wear jeans. That would
exactly.
be practical.
I think you'd look a lot nicer, frankly.
Definitely.
Skinny
or
jeans.
Or at least pants.
Skinny jeans would be great for riding a bike.
Yeah, so they don't get caught in the spokes. Come on, it's about safety.
Yes. Safety and comfort all the way.
I like, Zilpha, what you're saying about children, because if you look in the dress and grooming standard of BYU, I read it here and we sort of passed over this. It specifically says in there that you should check out the Strength of Youth manual, which is something they give to 12-year-olds. The problem that Tirza, I had a situation kind of like yours. I went to BYU as an undergraduate when I first started, and then I went to another school and came back. And it was so amazing to me how they treated everybody there like they were all 11 years old at BYU. You can get a good education at BYU, but you're going to be treated like a child. And that's what sort of speaks to this whole thing is the men and women at BYU are treated like children, and women are treated like children their whole career in the church. And that's what's really sad about this is there's no sense of self-determination of, and they're just given these unbearable standards. So, I've been dominating the talking here, and I have a bunch of lovely ladies here. So I want to hear from you guys sort of psychologically, especially as you grew up in the church, you know, how did you navigate these waters? I mean, what did these things mean to you? Because just to frame the question, what I hear all the time when I tell people that the main reason I walked out of the church, the one that kicked me out of the church was the misogyny of the church. And more often than not, I'll get the response, I don't know what you're talking about. Matter of fact, when I did that, I think I've said this before, I've been in a debate with three different women and they all said there's no misogyny in the church. There is no, women are honored in the church. And unfortunately, in my opinion, they're put up on a golden pedestal and it's insidious and it's wrong. But
a golden floor mat.
However you want to put it. Well, there's a lot of
times. Knocked down onto when they can't maintain the pedestal.
Because you're taught, you know, as a young man to respect women. Chivalry is really a way of saying, woman, you're not capable of, and people are going to get mad at me for saying this, I'm sure, but it is a way of saying, you here, let me help you because I am, you know, more capable and more powerful than you are.
Well, and it's, you know, I think some of these things are so subtle because it's really that you're being turned into something that's just looked at instead of something that's, you know, I mean, you've talked about this before today. If all the emphasis to the young women is on what they're wearing and being attractive, and that puts you in this position where you're on view all the time. And that's your job, is to be on view, not to be active, not to be out doing something, to be passive, to be admired, to be looked at, to be, you know, and that was seriously one of the things I hated most about BYU. I hated going to church at BYU because it felt like a fashion show, or when they would have visiting hours. I lived in Deseret Tower, and so normally boys were not allowed on your floor, but in order to allow for home teaching, they would alternate back and forth. Like one Sunday, the boys could come up to the floor for like an hour. Then the other Sunday, the girls could go up to the boys' floor. And you had to have your door open during that hour. And all the boys would like walk past the rooms and like look in at you. Oh, you know, these girls, not so great. We'll go on to the next room.
That would be awful.
Oh my gosh. It was like being in a cattle show. And that's what BYU felt like to me, because it was there was so much emphasis on appearance.
And on matchmaking.
And on matchmaking. Yeah, those two things. Ugh.
So yeah. I want to jump. I said I wasn't going to talk, but that can't. I'm a force that can't be stopped. But when you talk about objectification, and I think that term is bantied about quite a bit, because I think there's people who can look at somebody and say, I really want to have sex with that person. That doesn't mean they look at them as an object. So I think there's some teasing out we need to do there. But objectification in terms of overemphasizing the sexual features of an individual over their personality, let's use that working definition, happens either way. If you say you have to wear a gunny sack and cover up your curves and we don't want to see your hips and we don't want anything tied on your legs and we want your neck covered and you need to wear something down to your wrist, you are doing the exact same thing that those guys who run strip joints are doing. You are commodifying the sexuality of a woman, and you can't get away from objectification of women as sex by talking about it all the time in the negative. Like, if you do not objectify women, then pornography is neither good nor bad for you. It just is. But if you like have this really, really, you just can't stand it, you're probably doing the same thing. You're saying women can't, or you're saying women either can use their bodies for their own personal gain or they can't. But either way, you're commodifying. You're putting it on the marketplace. And what the church doesn't realize, I guess, is that they are a number one perpetrator in objectifying women's bodies because they can't leave it alone. And
well, as soon as they say to a young man, and they say it to both young men and young women, if you see a young woman who has a tight shirt on, it's not your fault if you get turned on by that. Then they're going to get turned on by that because most people are going to wear the dowdy things people that you're around a lot. And then if you see someone who's not wearing that, it's going to be like, wow, look at those, you know?
Here's
the paragraph. If everybody was always wearing tight things, you'd just be like, yeah, there's another woman, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right. It's like on the beach. But here's the paragraph from Strength of the Youth. Never lower your dress standards for any occasion. Doing so sends the message that you're using your body to get attention and approval, and that modesty is important only when it's convenient. But still implied in that is the flip side, that you're using your body to not get approval or not get attention, and you're still objectifying. You're still putting that message out there.
Definitely. And I know some may, you know, they, I mean, I'm sure they put it across here as actually even being helpful, you know, this idea of giving you ideas how not to put, you know, these nasty thoughts in boys' heads. But when you take it to the far level, you're really not helping with the things that are important, with abuse issues, because when you're focusing on behavior of the passive, the receiver of the negative behavior, and not on the actor and the doer of the negative behavior, you're contributing to the problem. And I don't know if this is too soon to bring I think I'm going to save my thought on some of this, maybe till we get to the strength of youth, because it ties in more directly. Are we going to be getting to that? Well, one point I thought about for the strength of youth as I was reading it, because I was trying to think, oh, you know, I do want to note some things that I like, since I'm normally so negative in these podcasts. And the one thing I did like, there was one sentence, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, because I don't have it in front of me. But the idea of if you have become a victim of rape, incest, or some other horrible, you know, sexual abuse, you have not sinned. Please see your bishop for help in, you know, dealing, you know, with this. And so I thought, okay, they're acknowledging it. That's great. But I'm like, how in the world do you effectively deal with people when you've just told them it's their fault because of how they dress? And, in the kind of work that I do as a victim advocate, I mean, it's clear how insidious this is. And John, you mentioned leaving because of the misogyny. What finally opened my eyes to leave was after for about a year, working with victims of sexual assault, dealing with the larger philosophical issues of why it happens, what the attitudes are in the society that allows it to happen or creates that perfect storm. I saw that, I mean, the church, not only does it fail miserably in helping, but it teaches the very behaviors and foundations of teaching people to become victims and teaching people to become victimizers. And that's that idea that people are not, cannot be held responsible for their thoughts and therefore their actions. You know, someone should be able to stand in front of you naked and you still have a choice about what you do.
Exactly. But, you know, Elder Marky Peterson gave a talk at a Relief Society conference in 1962. But he said, what tempts the boys to molest the girls today more than any other one thing is the mode of dress of our girls.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, and that scares me more because, I mean, there's this emphasis, on modesty with clothing is being pushed down younger and younger into the primary. So now that kind of sexualization of, I mean, there's this almost a sexualization of little children. Like, why should a little child care about
her shoulders,
wearing a sleeveless clothing or a two-piece bathing suit or... I mean, you know, like, I
exactly.
know my mom got upset because my sister was letting her son run around in just his diaper because they didn't have air conditioning in their house. So she was letting him run around in his diaper because it was really hot. And my mom was like, that's so inappropriate.
Oh, wow.
How can it be
He's
inappropriate
a
for a baby to be
exactly.
naked?
Well, I
the
always
primary
try-
is teaching. I mean, I This August, so just a couple of months ago, they had a sharing time in primary on dressing modestly for the little kids.
That's awful. Mm. Really awful. What were you going to say, Jess?
Oh, I was going to say, I always was pretty relaxed with what my kids wore when they were little, but I noticed that they would come home and change sometimes, you know, when they're going to a certain friend's house or if a friend came over and said, oh, you're wearing a sundress. You need a sweater to go over that. And it's,
wow.
It's pretty crazy.
It is. And when we're, you know, tied in with, when you wonder too, are you going to start blaming children? The fact that they are not dressed modestly, you know, as,
that is a disgusting
or that the
thought.
Parents don't dress the children modestly, that somehow they've contributed.
Right. If there's some kind of
abuse that goes on.
Well, you know, and I'm curious why it started. Because, I mean, like, talking about my mother dressed me in little sundresses and little outfits that would not be considered modest today. And that never bothered her. So that would have been, you know, the early 70s. That didn't bother her then, but it really bothers her now. So what has changed in the church since 1970 to now that's made that more of an issue?
I have an early book called Meet the Mormons, and it's interesting because I picked out and scanned photos that they have of the youth where they are in like tank top
wow.
kind of thing. And it was called Meet the Mormons, and it was probably about the 60s and 70s. But I think it's maybe this out Mormoning each other in some ways. Because I know by the time, like 15 years ago, when my son was small, and I'm embarrassed now from this point of view, that I made sure as a child his clothing was garment ready and thought that that's how, you know, you're a good parent. And the thing that I reflected on that put me there was the idea of when I was wearing garments, how they really pushed. You don't roll them. You don't pin them. You don't tuck them. And so I wore these awful, huge, like circus tent garments that would make sure they would never go above my knee. So usually they were several inches below my knee, and then this horrible crotch just barely above the knee, just to make sure, you know, that I couldn't be accused of not wearing my garments properly. And then recognizing how embarrassing it was when I first got married and some of the little, you know, the little old ladies that want to stick their nose in your business and make sure they point it out anytime your garments, you know, hang out from someplace. And so realizing, wow, well, you know, if they should be garment ready just before they go through the temple, well, how about a little bit younger? Well, how about younger? And I'm going to out Mormon you because my kids are going to be more modest than your kids at a younger age.
Yeah, it's an interesting question when it came about, why, and we could theorize. I know the Strength of the Youth came out in the late 80s, and before that, I don't think it was spelled out as carefully. BYU had its standards.
And, only from 1971, though.
And I know when I got to BYU in 91, there was much rejoicing and celebration because they just redid the dress and grooming standards and allowed women to wear blue jeans. I think before that they had to wear slacks. They allowed people to not wear socks. And there were some other, like, just really insignificant changes like that. But I don't know. The EFY culture seemed to take off, because when I was 12, that would have been, what, 85? It doesn't seem like it was as big of a deal as it is now, and it slowly grew in time. And they, if you go to EFY on BYU campus or one of the church ones, they enforce the dress and grooming standards. So I don't know. I don't know if it's as there's more visibility, we're trying to out Mormon the world, you know, show that we're different.
Well, you know, I did a search in the Friend, because I was just curious about this question and I wanted to see. And there were two articles from the 70s, one from 1971 that mentioned modesty, but it was talking about a man. So it was kind of talking about a different kind of modesty, like being
humble.
And there was one in 1975, a girl wrote a letter to the general authorities because her parents wouldn't let her wear slacks at school. And they told her that the brethren wouldn't like it if she wore slacks. So she wrote them to say, what do you really think? And they wrote back and said, well, you know, it's really up to your parents. But, you know, if you're playing, like, cause she said, I'm playing sports in a dress and I don't think that's good. And they said, well, if you're playing sports, probably pants are okay. And that was N. Eldon Tanner who said that, by the way. And but that was the last mention of modesty in the Friend until 2004. And since 2004, there have been 23 articles about modesty in the Friend. And they're starting to use the Strength of the Youth. I mean, like, some of those articles are about the Strength of the Youth. So they're pushing that down to the little kids, too.
Really?
Yeah, I've just been racking my mind. I was just looking for a book that I couldn't find. You know, as I've read through a lot of this stuff, if you go back to the 19th century, they didn't talk about this much at all. They talked about vanity a lot, like wearing too many petticoats. But for the early church, it was really always chiding the women on being vain. And that probably had to do with the culture. But if you get the stuff in the 50s, they talk a lot about things like the jitterbug. It's, and I mean, even early, that's more like the 20s. But during that whole period, like the pre-1960s, pre-counterculture, they get really specific. And there's a book I was looking for by Marky Peterson, his wife, where they talk about dance steps, and they get very, very specific about things we would just be like, who cares about that? So what I think is funny about all this stuff is how culturally reflective it is. Now, if I had a real strong TBM, they'd say it's because culture is just going to hell in a handbasket. It's just going down the tube. And
signs of the times.
But it goes back to that that cultural element of sexual dimorphism that I was talking about. And, you know, when the Mormons or whoever else goes into Africa or a different – or a place where you know, it's common for women not to wear shirts, what they first have to combat is they have to tell people that it's immodest to not wear a shirt.
They have to shame them.
They have to shame them first into it because there's no concept of that. You know, it's not like
– It's just like Satan in the Garden of Eden. See, look, you're naked. Go, run, hide.
Right. And it's,
but God never said that. He didn't care if they were naked or not.
Yeah, they can't leave well enough alone and say, well, obviously, we're talking about modesty and the things that go along with modesty. And it's not immodest in that culture.
If it's not sexual.
Right. And I think the real perversion of this whole thing in our culture, in Western American culture, is the whole thing on breastfeeding. Which is just so bizarre. And it shows where these things lead to, where you're doing something that's healthy, natural, not sexual at all.
What the breasts are really there for.
And people get all bent out of shape about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And saying, well, the least they can do is go into a restroom. And I'm like, when did you last eat a meal in a restroom? Get serious.
All right. Well, I do want to read the strength of the youth because it's sort of ground zero for this. There is a key paragraph here, and because we talked about that the paragraph for men was longer than it was for women for BYU. Now let's read this paragraph that defines these things. Immodest clothing includes short shorts and skirts, tight clothing. Shirts that do not cover the stomach and other revealing attire. Oh, immodest clothing includes short shorts, skirts, tight clothing, shirts that do not cover the stomach, and other revealing attire. Anybody here thinking have a picture of a man in their head right now?
Their cut off shirt. Yeah.
Young women should wear clothing that covers the shoulder and avoid clothing that is low cut in the front or the back or revealing in any other manner. Young men should also maintain modesty in their appearance. Yeah. All should avoid extreme in clothing, appearance, and hairstyle. Have you ever heard the word hairstyle applied to a man? You know, he might talk about his haircut or his hairdo, but not hairstyle.
No, they mean it for the men there, too, because they don't want, like, mohawks and purple hair.
The point I'm getting to is this paragraph and the amount of – is highly tilted towards women. I mean, it's sort of like – oh, and men, too. All should avoid extremes in parents' in appearance and hairstyle. Always be neat and clean. Avoid being sloppy or inappropriate. Casual in dress, grooming manners. Ask yourself, would I feel comfortable with my appearance if I were in the Lord's presence?
You know, I was going to say this earlier, but that made me think of this again. I wonder if the angel Moroni missed that memo.
Because he was naked, man. Yeah,
you can see all the way down.
Every time I read that, you know, I just get a little excited.
Well, and then my thought is, would Christ feel comfortable at BYU or BYU Idaho or in a chapel or in an LDS neighborhood, frankly, you know, in his, you know, beach shoes and his long hair and his, you know, long robes?
Yeah. How many of the prophets couldn't get into BYU and all that stuff?
Because Brigham would be in trouble.
Yeah. His statue at BYU is clean shaven, though.
Oh, I just think he had alligator skin. That was always the excuse in my family for the beard wearers. They had alligator skin.
But why the 18-inch beards like Lorenzo Snow had, you know, that anyway.
It was sexy.
When we think of modesty, we think of women. I mean, that when we talk about modesty in the church, we think about women. And to say the women are responsible, like we've shown three or four or five different times, and there's more. There's just tons of this stuff. What Zilf and I found as we started looking is this stuff is just everywhere.
Yeah, I've got more.
Oh,
I can post some more on our
Facebook
page.
We could go an hour and just read out of these young women's manuals these things like being attractive to others. And I found the word deodorant four times in the women's manuals. I haven't found it once in the men's. And who needs deodorant more, the stinky boys or the stinky girls? Well, they probably both need it. But it's they don't even have lessons on grooming for the men in the priesthood manuals, but they have several of them. They keep circling back to that
because
point.
Because appearance is such an important attribute for a young woman, for a woman to have in the church.
But what I said this before, the nasty thing is the appearance in under these certain parameters. Because if you if you show too much, like these tight, these skinny jeans that we're talking about in the first place. Steve?
I have a question. Why do you think that Utah has the highest breast augmentation rate in the nation?
I gave Zilpha my theory for this
sexual
before.
Dimorphism.
I like this.
It's because for a woman who's trying to follow the dress and grooming standards of the church, legitimately trying to follow it, because remember, she's supposed to be feminine, but she's not supposed to emphasize like her femininity. Like, she can't wear anything that's too tight to show that she has a feminine shape. Breasts are acceptable, however. So the bigger the bosoms there, the bigger the more feminine she's looking without violating the Mormon standard of dress and grooming. So
because they'll still stick out even if she's wearing some, you know, a potato sack.
Right.
So she'll look more feminine.
Yeah, if you look at all this stuff, it implies you're supposed to wear this frumpy, dowdy sort of clothing as a woman that doesn't show off your shape. That's one of the things. But you can't do anything about the breasts. So it's one of the few things that a woman can do to somehow look feminine, to obey those two conflicting things. So
and to be attractive in her potato sack.
Right. And, you know, what's weird is we have reversed this so much that I remember reading an interview with Betty Davis from like the 70s, and she was like, you know, talking about brassieres. She said, they're so disgusting. I never worn one, she said. Because women from that generation would say, you know, you're taking your boobs, you're lifting them up, and you're poking them out, and you're sticking them right in people's faces in a way that is less natural. But I think what people don't want to see, for whatever reason, is they don't want to see any movement, right? If the breast moves different than the body moves, then you're somehow being immodest or immoral. That's just weird and sick.
Or if you have nipples.
Or if your nipples are showing through, like mine always are. It's just bizarre. So if you have Barbie, so that in the Mormon standard, they have to not move, they have to be up high, and they have to be large. So I don't mean it critically. It's because women are trying to fulfill those bizarre standards.
Be attractive to their mates,
right?
Since that's where their power is and their value.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, I've been thinking all along about what you were talking about, the objectification and the, you know, and sort of just thinking of the double standard that we always seem to find ourselves in. Like for me specifically, I was a dance major at BYU. So I'm reading through these dress and grooming standards. There's like we violated that every single day, every dance class in the Richards Building all day long. And so it's just like this, it was always kind of a struggle, I think, for me, and you can attest to that.
She's talking to her husband.
Yeah, with like what to wear, how to feel good about it. Am I being obedient as a Mormon woman, even though this is my career, and I never could really come to terms with what to wear.
I just think it's really confusing. I mean, it goes back to the confusing thing. I mean, Zilpha, you said before, like beach, I mean, that's okay, this is not okay. So just in a day at BYU, for you, going through, it's like confusing. Like, okay, I'm wearing this now, but now I'm going to the, you know, to a cougar eat. Now I'm not okay. Now I'm okay. Now I'm not okay. It's just that whole, like, confusion with everything as far as modesty and clothes go.
Well, right. And Steve, you mentioned the whole power aspect. I was thinking of that. What better way of exerting your power and control over others than to keep them off balance? To not clearly state the expectations, therefore, you know.
Off balance except for what I say.
Yeah. When I say it.
Then that will rebalance you.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that I've said, and I mentioned at the beginning, is that the church can be psychologically damaging to people. And people ask what I'm talking about. This is the sort of thing I'm talking about, is that from a very, very young age, and we pointed out younger and younger, that women, especially in the church, are fed a line that they are defined as mothers and wives and daughters. I mean, that's sort of outside the scope of this. But where it becomes important to this is they have to be attractive as mothers, daughters, and wives. And that's where their value is. And if you read the Young Women's Manual and the young women's values that they recite, they all tie up into that being desired. So as Tierra so eloquently pointed out, you know, to put them on display and then say your worth is in if you're chosen by a priesthood worthy holder. Oh, but by the way, not everybody gets chosen in this life, da 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 da. It just messes with people's minds in such a way that I've met lots of women who've left the church and now the world's wide open to them. Their husbands are like, go do whatever you want. You can go to school. You can, and they're just, they, it's so hard to overcome this programming and say, I am a person of worth outside these objectifications, motherhood, wifehood, daughterhood. That's just as objectifying as saying she's a pair of tits, because you're reducing her to a feature of her either anatomy or her person or her character, what she does, and not looking at her as a person. And I would say when it comes to objectification of women, the church is just as bad as the worst things out there.
Have you ever noticed that the tight clothing is not an issue? The tight clothing is not an issue with somebody who's like completely overweight. You know, that's not immodest. That's just because they're overweight.
Yes.
But if you've got a nice body, it is a problem. Because I did notice that there are some problems with tight clothing. I know my husband and I were trying to differentiate, you know, talking it out together. And so it's like, you know, if your shirt underneath is tight to show your breasts, that's a problem. So it's like...
Right, but if you have kind of a boyish figure, you can wear tight clothes and no one will point a finger at you because you're not sexual. I mean, you don't look as sexual.
Yeah, and for the picture of our friend at BYU Idaho, you'll see that she is curvy. And if I agree, not in an unpleasant way, she's an attractive girl. But if she was 60 pounds lighter, she was a skinny, skinny girl, she could be wearing clothing tighter than that, than what she's wearing, and no one would say boo. And this is once again what's so difficult when they don't define out the standards. You know, look at how pedantic they got on the sideburns. Can't go to the cheek. But then it's easy to, you know, check. You can just say, okay, he's in check. But they don't give that latitude to the women, because basically what you're saying is they would say this same standard of tightness is okay with this chick and not okay with this chick, you know.
Oh, yes. Absurdity, definitely. And see, and I don't understand this. This has always been kind of my issue. Even when I've been looking for, you know, looking at charter schools for my kids, things like that, where I look at I will not send my kids someplace where there's a uniform. I check out the standards at the different schools. And of course, I like my kids to dress so they don't get sent home. So I try to follow that. But basically, my kids need some place to have some self-expression, to decide how they want to look, how they want to present themselves. So the idea of trying to control them by sending them to a school where they have to wear a uniform, I don't like at all. And I know at one point, you know, my son grew his hair long. He doesn't have it long anymore. But when it was, and he would get grief, you know, every time he'd visit grandma, oh, do you want me to cut your hair? Do you want me to cut your hair? He'd have friends from school come and visit saying, hey, cut your hair, man. Cut your hair, man. And I would get so frustrated. And I finally said, hey, you know, do you want someone who can decide what length of hair they feel most comfortable in? You know, or do you want some guy? Well, and the story that I told is, you know, he's got this peer pressure telling him to cut his hair. And I said, and I'm glad he's willing to wear it long if he wants it long, because maybe those same kids that might pressure him to go take drugs, he's going to be able to say no to them too. So so you have the peer pressure to maybe dress, not wear enough clothing, and then this peer pressure to wear too much clothing, but they're giving into peer pressure and not what works for them and trying out their own decision making. And I think clothing is a really great way to try out decision making and not on, oh, how about this drug or something else.
All right. Well, I think we've sort of been around the table. Any last thoughts on this?
Oh, I have one more.
Yes.
Well, I was just thinking about the silly BYU Idaho thing, and I think there was a sign that said, if you don't understand these things, you can go home and pray about it or something like that. And Steve and I were talking this afternoon, like, what if somebody went home and prayed and the answer was, skinny jeans are okay, man, you know?
Well, it said that if you didn't get the answer,
what did it say?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was on that paper or if it was in the...
The paper itself is a study in more... We could do a whole podcast on this thing. Yeah, I will read it to you. If your pants are tight enough for us to see the shape of your leg, your pants are too tight. That's in bold. If we can see the shape of your belly button, your top is too tight. Your top is too tight in bold. The next paragraph.
An Audi.
The CES dress and grooming standard, underlined and a bigger font, that you have agreed to honor, and honor is in a bigger, is in capital letters, state that, quote, clothing is inappropriate when it is ... form-fitting, end quote. The skinny jeans style is not appropriate attire. It also says, quote, dress and skirts must be knee length or longer, end quote. Italic. Short skirts with tights underneath are short skirts. This is the golden paragraph. This is more for anybody who wants to study Mormonism. This is it. This is it. Get ready. If your clothing or attitude does not meet the commitments you have made to live the honor code, will you please go home and prayfully visit with your Father in heaven and recommit yourself to be a true disciple and abide by the honor code that defines your commitment to be a disciple? Because what that's saying, in a nutshell, is you go pray about it, and then you're going to confirm what we're telling you. There's no agency there. Like, if you don't understand this or you don't agree with this, then you got to keep doing the stuff until you understand it. It's the we're telling you what God wants for you.
We're telling you the answer.
Right.
Pray until you get that answer.
I've taken my new standard as I go around telling believers what God wants all the time. I said, God wants this house to be purple, or God wants me to go get a cheeseburger. And then they say, how do you know that God wants to do that? And I say, exactly.
Well, there's a quote from when I was doing my research for this. I came across an article in The Friend about, I don't know if you've heard of the head, shoulders, knees, and toes thing, mm-hmm. That you're supposed to do for modesty.
No.
Like, so they have the young women stand and play that game, head, shoulders, knees, and toes. So they put their hands on their head, and if they see, like, their shirt pulls up, then...
I would fail that all the time.
Because it's great. So this girl is being taken shopping by her young women's leader, and she has her pick out some clothes and then try them on, and then she says, okay, now let's start with your head. Anna put her hands on her head and saw her shirt pull up, baring her skin. Oops, she gasped, tugging it back down. Sister Jenton put Anna's hands back up. That's part of the game. You see how much your shirt lifts up? Now try shoulders. Anyway, so she goes through the whole thing. Shoulders, knees, and toes, and everything, you know, shows something different. Anyway, I love that line. That's part of the game. I think that's exactly
that's part
what this
of the
is.
Game.
It's part of the game that you have to play to be a good little Mormon. That you just have to follow these ever-shifting rules. And if you don't, then the boogeyman's going to come get you.
That was in The Friend, huh?
Or boys will want to have sex with you.
Well... same thing, right?
All right. Well, ladies, thank you for joining us here tonight. I hope you've all recovered from this nonsense. And for those of you who can or able, please pull your daughters out of this, or at least give them a talking to and let them know that this stuff is all bull crap. What do you look at me like that? All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues on our website at MormonExpression.com. You can send us mail at mail@MormonExpression.com.
And that is not spelled M-A-L-E.
M-A-I-L. And well, thanks, everybody.
Good night. Thank
Good
you.
Good night.
Bye. Thanks.